probably not something that we think about often, but it is something that the Bible addresses. It is certainly something that we've witnessed. Perhaps we've even, as we're going to study like we did this morning, it's something that we find that really we've either dabbled in, or maybe it's something that we have struggled with or we are presently struggling with. But I hope that the lesson will be of benefit to you. So take out your Bibles and follow along. We're going to go to 2 Kings chapter 5, a very familiar story, one that we mentioned Bible class with regards to Naaman the leper. And let's go back and see some things that we can learn around that story. So you know the story very well, so just kind of go down through here. I'll highlight some verses, maybe point to where it's at. But in 2 Kings chapter 5, we have Naaman, who is the commander of the Syrian army, a very high position that he holds in this particular government. This is a Gentile nation, like we talked about in Bible class, the point that Jesus is making there in the synagogue when he reads that passage. Notice in verse 1 that it tells us that the eyes of his master, he was a very great and honorable man. So he is of character and has been selected for this high position. But I also want you to notice he's had success as a commander, but verse 5 says, the king of Syria said, go now and I will send a letter to the king of Israel. Verse 1. I don't know how I got so far in the text already. Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. I don't know if you've thought about that. Again, this just shows that God works in the Gentile nations, and God has his hand in the things, and it's an interesting truth that God is behind his victories, that he's having these great victories. That's because the Lord has allowed it. But we also know that he was a leper. And that disease is a horrible disease. It is a disease that, and I could have showed you some gross pictures, but I know you don't particularly like to see that. It kills the skin, and you know how sensitive your skin can be. So it damages nerves. You can lose a lot of the pictures that you see are people that have lost limbs or fingers or things of that nature. And he has leprosy. And we know, of course, in the Old Testament with the children of Israel, God had specific instructions for what to do with a leper. And we carry on to the New Testament and we see lepers crying out to Jesus. They have to, you know, they are in a quarantine, if you would. But he's a leper, and this disease can be very, very painful and very destructive. And you know how this story goes. His wife had a little maid girl that had come into their custody from Israel, and she brings to their attention the fact that there's a prophet, if he knew the prophet in Israel. So this sets out to him getting letters from the king and making a trip to Israel to see the prophet that this young lady has brought to their attention. And he is told when he comes, he goes and he's sent to the prophet Elijah, who sends a messenger out with specific instructions there in verse 10. Elisha sent a messenger to him saying, go and wash in the Jordan 7 times and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean. That didn't set well with Naaman. The text goes on there in verse 11 and 12 that I said to myself, he will surely come out to me, verse 11, and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hands over the place and heal the leprosy. You know, you picture what's going on in his mind as he thought Elijah would come out, do this big, you know, production, wave his hands around and all. And he didn't like that. He hasn't even met Elijah. He sent a messenger out to him. But what you recognize in verse 13, that there are these individuals that come into the story. I've actually brought lessons in the past about the little maiden and then the servants. What would he have done if he didn't have that little maiden? What would he have done if he didn't have his servants that were whispering in his ear and saying things like in verse 13, they came near and spoke to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you have not done it? If he had told you to go over here and climb this mountain and go to the very top and get this particular plant and then crush it up and do all these things," he's like, whatever the case may be, "wouldn't you have done this? How much more then when he says to you, go wash and be clean?" Of course, he thought it'd be a much better place, much better location of water and all those types of things. But in reality, we know that when he went and washed 7 times, if you look at verse 14, it says that his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child and he was clean. Story of Naaman and the leper. That when he obeyed, and we talk about, we make the points that, it wasn't till the 7th time that he was restored, but he had to be obedient. Couldn't do it 5 times, couldn't do 6 times, and a lot of good things. But look at verse 15. So what happens is, Naaman returns to the man of God, he and all his aides, and came and stood before him and said, "Indeed, now I know that there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. Now, therefore, please take a gift from your servant." So, after his healing, he offers Elijah a gift. Seems reasonable, seems very, show your gratitude. But notice that it says that the Lord, "as the Lord lives," Elijah said, "before whom I stand, I will receive nothing." And he urged him to take it, but he refused. "Take this, no, take this, you're going to take the, no, I don't want to take this, no, no." So that's what happens. And I had never really noticed that after this and his refusal, look at verse 17, just something perhaps you can ponder on some more. But Naaman said, "Then if you're not going to take this gift, please let your servant be given 2 mule loads of earth. I want to carry back 2 mule loads of dirt. For your servant will no longer offer either burnt offerings or sacrifices to other gods, but to the Lord." Now, there's some debate about is this really he's going to take this back, or is this, well, I'd never really noticed that. And so I just go on kind of the obvious. I'm not stating this as a fact or anything of that nature, but it struck me. Why would he want to do that? Well, some say, well, he took it back and he built an altar. That may very well be the case. The text goes on about how he will be going into the false worship, and when his master, the king, leans upon him, he asks that not be held against him. That, he now realizes this is the true and living God. So what was he doing with the dirt from the land? Just think about what he's asking. "I want some dirt from the land of Israel where the true and living God dwells among these people." It just seems kind of beautiful. That's what he wants to do. I thought, well, he talks about kneeling down. Did he want his section to have ground that came from Israel, from the true and living God? I don't know. But you can ponder on that, because this was his request. Well, if you won't take my gift, can I have 2 mules of dirt so I can take that back with me? Perhaps, again, to worship on himself. Here's where we stop, and I've done this many times, bring a lesson on Naaman and all the different points that's found in this story, and this is a true story. But this story does not end here, and that's where perhaps I haven't done well in continuing on in the story. The rest of the story is what our lesson is going to be about. Because if you look at verse 20, you may have some type of heading with regards to where the story turns to the end of the chapter. Mine is titled Gehazi's Greed. So this is his servant, and this will be why we're wanting to talk about greed. Greed is a strong desire to have more than you currently have. and it's a desire of the soul. The Bible uses the word greed or greedy a number of times. The King James, when you look at the Hebrew word here, tends to, or in the New Testament, it's found a few times, it tends to be translated extortion in the King James and the New King James Version. A couple of biblical verses, Proverbs chapter 15, and in looking at these, it's not my intention to examine them, but to show you some of the teaching. If you just read with me what the text says, Proverbs 15:27 says, "He who is greedy for gain troubles his own house, but he who hates bribes will live." So again, that gives, you know, the idea of I want something, and I'm willing to even take a bribe in my greed. Elders and deacons in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 3, elders are not to be greedy. Deacons in verse 8 are not to be greedy. It is a quality and a characteristic. It is a must in the leadership within the local congregation. They don't need to be doing things that they have a desire for, want, and a strong desire to have more and more, where that is their aim and that is their focus. Now, we should stop right there and just make the point, if that's who they should become and mature as a Christian, why isn't the scriptures then telling us all that's what we need to mature to be? And I would say absolutely, we all should take note of that. And that's a purpose of the lesson. There's a strong connection between greed and covetousness, or greed and extortion. Look at Colossians chapter 3. This has always been one of my favorite passages because it really addresses the heart of what I believe is the root of sin. And that root is selfishness, me. It's sin is when my desires take over and I don't have control of them and I sin. And that's very selfish in nature, very, very selfish. And I make that connection through a passage like this, Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5. He says, "Therefore put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry." Covetousness is placing that something that I desire ahead of God. And that is going to be obviously the heart of what we're talking about when we think about greed and what's behind greed. It's all about me and what I can gain, my desire to have more than what I currently have. And then when you connect that to 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10, where we're familiar with, "For the love of money," and the article there, some say, "For the love of money is a root of all evil," versus "the root of all evil," the King James. I grew up, you know, preaching out of that. And so people are like, "Well, it is a root of all evil." Well, if you think this through, if my desire is to covet money, and I have this strong desire, what have I placed ahead of God? Something ahead of God. What is that? That's idolatry. Why would you do that? Selfish. You know, it's my desire over the will of God. So that's kind of how I back that up in my thinking is, and that's why, as I mentioned this morning, Jesus said, deny yourself. We were talking about poor in spirit. And the first thing he says is you have to deny yourself. Self-denial. It's not my interest. It's what is it that God wants me to do? That's selflessness, not selfishness. And so all that tied together, so you start saying, okay, so greed tied to this covetousness and extortion. Look at Matthew chapter 23, where Jesus is rebuking the scribes and the Pharisees. In Matthew chapter 23 and verse 25, when he's doing this, he says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence." You know, so what was wrong with the scribes and Pharisees? It was they wanted and they wanted and they wanted the people to give. Think about Eli's sons. I mean, they here they were supposed to be doing the right thing, and what are they doing? We want the best meat. You give us the best meat, and you know, and they were just so wicked because it was nothing more than me, and that's this idea of greed, this self-indulgence, this extortion. Again, you see the word that is tied to this thought. Let me give you, this is over the top. You may know about this person. I never knew about this person. This is Leona Helmsley. Some of you are shaking your head. Did not know about her. She was a New York hotel real estate billionaire in New York City. She owned the Empire State Building. I didn't even know that was possible. But she owned the Empire State Building. Her objects of wealth were ridiculous. And I mean, you could, you know, for example, a $45,000 silver clock shaped like the Helmsley Building. I mean, just, and yet, to get you to understand her mind and her greed, she would require that her staff reuse their tea bags. She would have them take it out and say, you set them over there and let them dry out, and then you reuse them. All the while, her dog, I think the dog's name was Trouble, ate out of a bowl from Tiffany's that was worth $4,000. And the dog ate chef-prepared meals. And the staff, the way she treated them was ridiculous. When in her will, the dog's going to get $12 million to the dog. And listen to this. All while disinheriting two of her grandchildren. So in 1988, she was convicted of tax evasion. And one of her housekeepers testified in that trial and said, what she said to her, she said, she told me, we do not pay taxes. Only little people pay taxes. She wasn't willing to give up anything. And her greed was so strong that when her son died fairly quickly, and obviously before her, she sued her daughter-in-law and got the estate won, got the money, and left them with an eviction and really no money. And that's extreme. But that certainly highlights the dangers of what greed can become, and entrenched in a person's heart. That's, we almost say, is psychotic. But, and there was a, I forget what the, she was known as, I don't know, something like the penny pitcher billionaire or something of that nature. But her desire to hang on to wealth and to lavish herself was just ridiculous. But Jesus addressed the root of murder when he said it's hate. And he addressed the root of adultery is lust. And if you want to know what the root of greed is, it's selfishness. It's stinginess. It's all about me. Now, wait a minute. How did we get onto that? Well, let's go back to 2 Kings chapter 5. You remember I told you there's the rest of the story. In my section from verse 20 to 27, which we'll read now, is identified as Gehaziel's greed. But Gehaziel, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, look, my master has spared Naaman, the Syrian, while not receiving from his hand what he brought. But as the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. So Gehazi pursued Naaman, and when Naaman saw him running after him, he got down from the chariot to meet him and said, is all well? And he said, all is well. My master has sent me, saying, indeed, just now, two young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the mountains of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of garments. So Naaman said, please take two talents. And he urged him, and he bound two talents of silver to two bags with two changes of garments and handed them to his servant, and they carried them on ahead of him. When he had come to the citadel, he took them from their hand and stored them away in his house. Then he let the men go, and they departed. Now he went in and stood before his master, Elisha. Elisha said to him, "Where did you go, Gehazi?" He said, "Your servant did not go anywhere." And then he said to him, "Did not my heart go with you when the man turned back from his chariot to meet you? Is it time to receive money and to receive clothing, olive groves, vineyards, sheep, oxen, male and female servants? Therefore, the leprosy of Naaman shall be cling to you and your descendants forever." And he went out from his presence, leprous as white as snow. Well, now the rest of the story deals with the subject of greed. You remember, Elijah had rejected that gift. And Gehazi sees this as a wasted opportunity. He didn't take it, but it's almost like, well, somebody should take it. I'll take it. And so here's what greed does. Greed motivated him to leave his master's side and run after Naaman. You see, this desire that he had actually said, he didn't just have it. You know, we can stop it. You know, it motivated him to get up and chase after him after he's left. And that, again, greed will take you, like all sins. See, that's what happens, is we don't deal with it. We don't shut it down. We let it then move us in the wrong direction. And so he should have thought about it and said, "Oh, no. Elijah didn't take it. This would be wrong. I'm not going to do that." But instead, it motivated him to run ahead to get that gift. Did you catch two lies? It motivated him to lie. The first was when he shows up and Naaman says, "Is all well?" And he says, "Yeah, all is well, but Elijah sent me with this request," which wasn't true. Lie number one. Lie number two comes when he gets back and Elijah says, "Where have you been?" He says, "I didn't go anywhere." Lie number two. So his desire for this gift to get something. Now think about this. Two talents of silver and two changes of garments. Well, you have to understand, garments was a big deal. I mean, you know, if you need a new shirt, you just go over here to Walmart tonight, pull out your cash or your debit card, and out the door you walk with your new T-shirt or new whatever you need. It wasn't like that. I mean, could rather expensive, could take a long time, you know, those types of things. So we don't really have a sense of the value of something like that, having changes of garments, but it was enough to motivate him. That's what he asked for. And here's the other thing. It brought other people into the lie, whether they existed or didn't exist. I mean, he brings two fictionist people, two prophets from Ephraim. And so what do you do sometimes? Well, what you're doing is you're shifting this to some noble deed. You catch what he's doing? Somebody needs this. We could sure use you to give us this. Oh, yes, by all means, take these two talents and two changes of garments for these young men. You can almost hear Naaman saying, "I'm glad that you came. You know, I really was trying to give him something, but I'm glad that you showed up because I was more than happy to do that." I mean, you know he's ecstatic from what has happened. And so by doing that, What's his greed doing? It's protecting his noble intentions, or it's pushing noble intentions forward and the needs of others. But again, it's a lie. Whether these people are real or imagined, this is how he's chosen to get the gift. And he held his own self. This hid his own selfish desires from Naaman, even, because now he's, you know, it's for somebody else. It's the old, "I got a question for you. One of my friends has a question," you know, and in reality, it's us, you know, or "My friend's got this problem," you know. So we transition that off to hide our own selfish desires or material things. You remember, Achan had this problem. They go into Jericho, they conquered Jericho, but they were told specifically, don't take anything. Well, he saw that Babylonian garment and silver, and he took them. Why would he do that? Greed. Desire to have something. Strong desire. He's like, wow, you know, I can't pass that up. And so he takes it. And hold your place, but look at Joshua chapter 7, because it says in verse 2, 21 rather, 7:21, here's Achan. When I saw among the spoil a beautiful Babylonian garment, 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold weighing 50 shekels, I coveted them. Remember I said greed and covetousness are tied at the hip, and took them. So he saw, he coveted, he took, and there they are hidden in the earth in the midst of my tent with the silver under it. Well, what did Gehazi do? Remember when they got to the citadel, which is like, you know, coming into town, he takes the things from him, he goes, hides them in his house. That's what Achan had done. He attempts to hide his greed, attempts to hide what he has done. But verse 26 tells us what we always know. God knows. God knows. How did Elijah know that? How did Elijah's heart go with Gaziel? Because he was God's spokesperson and God worked through him and he knew exactly what had happened. A man cannot do that. God could tell him that. God could make that known. And so when we try to do these things, lie or try to hide our intentions, and we bring other people into the equation to make it look like some noble event of some sort, to hide our strong desire to have something, God knows. Did not my heart go with you? Well, I make this point when we come to things like this because we can be really good at hiding things from people, family, friends. But God knows what's buried in your thoughts and your heart. That cannot be hidden from Him. And we can't run from that. We have to acknowledge that, accept that, and be held accountable to that truth. Now, Gehazi is asked when he says, where did you go? And he said, I didn't go anywhere. And he says, well, my heart went with you. Then he asks him this question. Is it time to receive money and to receive clothing and olive groves and vineyards, sheep, oxen, male and female servants? What's the point of this question? Well, Elijah had made it very clear that he was not going to take anything from Naaman. He refused. Why would he do that? Well, the answer is found in this question that he asked him. Is it time? And the answer to the question is, Gaziel, it's not time for you to, or me, to take these things. So what would that mean? Well, did Naaman the Syrian, going back to Syria, need to go back with the idea of, you know what, you can go back and give a big gift to the prophet of Israel, and like me, you know, I showed my gratitude and look what great thing happened. Is what God did here something to believe that you can, that was a gift from God when he came up out of the water and he was healed. God allowed that and did that. Is that something, that gift, could you purchase it? Should you try to purchase that gift? And the answer is no. So it was not the time, not in this situation. This man came to learn about the true and living God. He went away understanding this is the true and living God. When I go back and my masters worshiping. That's not the true and living God. Please, please, you know, if you look at that section, it's like, don't hold, please excuse me from that. And then you pollute the water by making this, I'd like to have something for that. Yeah, sure, we'd like some gifts. And Elijah refuses. Gehazi goes and says, yeah, I'd like to have some of that. You remember, if you look back at what he said there, he says, but as the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him, verse 20. He was baffled how come nothing had been taken, and I'll go after him and I'll get something. I'll get something. And he did. He got him some stuff. But when questioned about that, it was the wrong thing to do. It was not the time. Elijah knew that it was time to make sure that God is honored and that a prophet is not and should not act out of self-interest and self-promotion. And that stands true today. If you ever find that me as a preacher, I'm motivated by self-interest and self-promotion, I hope that you'll say, listen, you know better than that. But Gehazi had the familiar why not syndrome. Why not syndrome? And so I thought of this little, this just came to my mind, and it just makes perfect sense to me. Greed gave birth to why not. And why not had a twin brother, what's the big deal? And they had a little sister, what's the harm? And then little brother was, who will know? And that's what greed does. It just says, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? And so what you see there at the very end was, he didn't get away with it. Because what God did is God took that leprosy that had come off of Naaman and he put it on Gehazi. And did you catch how long? It says, it shall cling to you and your descendants forever. And I take that to mean that as long as his family was living, they dealt with leprosy. Now, it makes you wonder, was this something that was just really a moment of weakness? Was this something that was rooted in his heart? And I don't know the answer to that. We can't say for certain. But here's our lesson and just some final points. Because while we cannot say for certain, we can know this from this account. You have to be on guard at all times for moments of greed. Just like we were talking about holding grudges. These things can happen subtly. Before you know it, I've just got a strong desire for whatever it is that I'm longing after. Those times when we go after gain, when we should be content. See, Gehazi was being cared for, no doubt. Or those periods of time when we're only thinking about our own interest. We have to be on guard for that. We have to be on guard for those times when we believe that nobody's going to know. And those moments when it's so easy to cover our motives with a lie. And that one's, I think, something that slips on all of us pretty easy. In awkward moments, we lie to cover our motives. And it certainly was true in what Gehazi was doing when he had these lustful thoughts, this covetousness and desire for this type of gain. So may we be resolved to abhor that which is evil and cling to that which is good. You might be here tonight and you're not a Christian. You've selected one of my favorite invitation songs, and I always enjoy singing this, not only as a way of teaching and admonition, but as a way of a challenge to myself. But you might be here tonight. Will you let the Lord have his way with you? Do you need to obey the gospel? We would encourage you to do that. If you need prayers, confession of sin, whatever the case may be, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.